Welcome back, college football fans, to the Zuch and Wild podcast. Wow, the offseason's already over. Well, it's still the offseason, but it is good to be recording and back on a schedule. We are back to releasing episodes every other week, starting with these conference breakdowns. And the first one we got is, yeah, I would say the biggest one, the biggest conference in the country. And, you know, they think the world revolves around them, but you know, there is some truth to that, and that's the Southeastern Conference we will be covering today. A full breakdown of every single team and some of our predictions. Zuch, this is it was a hefty conference to go through.
I mean, yeah, with 20 teams now. It's not only 20 teams, but like what, at least four like blue bloods now.
So that's what I was saying. Like the realignment. Everything, I mean, Texas and OU, I mean, I didn't even know what I was going to lead the show with, because usually you'd just be like, oh, the greatest coach of all time in the SEC, or at least the modern era, retired. How's life going to be post-Saban, which we'll talk about after this. But the realignment thing, I mean, Texas and OU completely changes the entire game. And I think another aspect changes the entire game is going away from the East and West. So yeah. I think there's so many new things, so many new little tricks and trinkets of this new college football world that are going to, I think, play into some teams' hands quite nicely. And I think some teams are going to get screwed in this whole thing.
It's going to be rough for quite a few of the traditional SEC schools. I don't know, though. Like, part of me also thinks that there's, like, so much competition in there that you're going to be able to go 9-3 and make the playoff in that conference.
So that's another reason. You know, with the 12-team playoff, you don't even have to make the SEC championship game to probably make it to the playoffs, which opens up a whole nother thing. Like, and that's why we'll talk about the scheduling, like, really matters, because there are some teams that don't play certain teams, and almost it's been a power, I would say a power vacuum since Saban's left. I mean, it's kind of Kirby and then everyone else. I mean, what do you have? Brian Kelly, who might be a little bit past his prime. You have Lane and a couple other coaches trying to make their way through. Eli Drinkwitz, who we'll talk about later, but it seems Sun Belt, yeah, maybe he needs to go back to the Sun Belt, but it seems like there's these, it's Kirby and then just a combination of two new teams entering the conference realignment within the SEC, college football realigning with the 12 team. Maybe I was just getting excited looking through all of the teams doing this breakdown, but this seems to be one like the deepest SECs that I think we've had in a while. And it's due to Texas and OU coming in, which just add, like you said, two more blue bloods. And maybe that is it. But I started to look through these teams and it's like, holy crap, there's a lot of good talent on these teams. Like, I mean, we'll talk about it later. There's going to be a team that I think is going to finish like fifth or sixth that before the year, I mean, their fans are going to hate me, but there's just too many good teams.
Yeah, I mean, okay, I'll make this quick, but how many teams that are in the SEC now do you think would be projected to finish first in all the other Power Four conferences besides the Big Ten?
Georgia's the one, and the other ones I won't say who. So I'll go Georgia +1, +1, +1. So four total teams, I think. 3-4. The fourth one is on the edge, I think. So I think three that are for sure, and a fourth or a fifth that you could make an argument for.
Yeah. That's what I had earlier when I was thinking about it. 4-5. Yeah,
it is going to be quite crazy. But Zuch, you wanted to talk. There is the revenue sharing that could change the game NIL-wise, especially with these SEC TV contracts. We know how college football is changing, and it's either adapt or die. And Zuch, go for it. This is your bread and butter, getting into the nitty-gritty.
So from what I read, and I could be a little bit wrong in how I interpreted it, but basically if we'll take A&M, for example, if they had like $100 million in revenue, right, from football, a percentage of that is now with this new, because it came out because they're going to have to pay all the people from like the past, like a certain amount of money. There's like the settlement or whatever.
Thanks, Ed O'Bannon. Thanks, Ed O'Bannon. NCAA basketball. Who would have thought?
Yeah. So basically, from what I read, it will kind of depend on the profit your school brings in or the revenue your school brings in and how long you've been there. So like a senior at A&M would make more than a freshman would at A&M. And you can add that on top of NIL deals. So my kind of what I took away from it is I think there's a pretty significant gap already between specifically the SEC and Big Ten and pretty much most of the teams in their conferences. But I don't think there's a group of five school. And like we went to Boise State. I truly do not think right now with how things are, Boise State is playing the same sport. Boise State or any other group of five team is. I think you are lying to yourself if you say they're playing for the same national championship right now. And you add that into it. And I don't like realistically know how those teams are going to like, I don't really think they compete right now. If I'm being completely honest with you, like,
I think if they're smart and they don't want to make too much work for themselves, here's what they do. They keep it the way it is and they give, and I know some people don't like it, but I think it's what makes the sport nice. I think you keep one spot open in the 12 team. You just have to keep that pity. It's almost like it'd almost be like a pity spot. As long as you keep that one pity spot open, you can pretty much, the big boys can do whatever they want. If you keep that one spot open, they will be able to do whatever they want. There's a second that that one spot gets taken away, the automatic group of five bid, that's when I think chaos is going to break loose. And I think that's when college football may have jumped the shark, and we'll see in the viewership if that happens.
Yeah, if they do that, if they took that away, there would be truly at that point no reason to me for the group of five to stay aligned with the Power Five. I mean, you're just at that point kidding yourself. If you really think that they're going to put in, even if you're undefeated, you over like a, I mean, there's, and it's, I'm not saying it's fair or it's right, but there's just the SEC just signed a $3 billion TV deal. Like they're not like, I'm sorry, but that is, West, the MAC has to play it on Tuesdays and Wednesdays.
Yeah, no.
The MAC has to play on Tuesday and Wednesday to not make money. So, like,
yeah.
I think Boise State and a couple of these other schools are a little bit better off than, like, the MAC.
Like a Memphis or a, yeah, like a Memphis and a Tulane.
Yeah, they're a little bit better off than MAC or CUSA or whoever. But, and I know San Jose State's like catching a stray here, but if like you like, do you really think they're playing the same sport as the University of Georgia right now?
Hey, come like, on! Hey! Bill Walsh? No, was it Bill Walsh? Dennis Erickson? Was it? Who was the guy that always was it Dennis Erickson or was it Dick Vermeil who was at San Jose State? I can't tell. Dick it was Vermeil. One of them. Well, he's gonna be crying like he always does, unfortunately, if San Jose State gets left behind. But quickly, before we jump into the team-by-team breakdown, Zuch, the floor is yours. 1 minute straight. You have some complaints about the SEC TV schedule.
So part of this is I'm just going to miss – like I was like looking at the Big Ten now on CBS, and like the first – like their first game is like Ohio State versus like – I don't even know who it was. It's a G5 school, and I'm gonna miss like the, and people can say whatever they want, call me an SEC homer, say whatever you want to, everybody looked forward to the 1:30 CBS SEC
SEC on CBS. It's going to change the whole dynamic of, you know, what gets consumed in the afternoon, because that was kind of like the standard late afternoon. It's like that's going to be the top game, like that's going to be the top game, and it's going to cut into the ABC game a little bit too if that game's good.
Right, and the ABC game would always, I swear to God, be like Memphis would be on there, or like Miami versus Boston College, or it'd be like pouring down rain. But So here is like some things I got from the schedule. First off, I'm not like the biggest fan of the Egg Bowl being moved to Black Friday. But just like looking at it, you know, like the September 7th Saturday night ABC game is South Carolina at Kentucky. ESPN2 is, and these are all the same time, ESPN2 is Cal at Auburn. Like, I can't, like, I know it's week two, and usually week two,
you hey, don't you know, I was have... at the, I was at the Cal at Auburn game last year in Memorial Stadium. That was a hell of a game, man. I'll tell you what, that was, you know, this is what I think there's beauty in watching college sports. When you get two teams that are both perfectly just average, you get something beautiful. And that is like 2004 football, which was, it was just great. It was great. And I did watch a 70-year-old Auburn fan. And yes, he was wearing the Columbia PFG, the Auburn uniform. You have to wear the Columbia PFG if you're an Auburn fan. And he did yell at a Cal fan who was wearing the Cal uniform of the striped long sleeve rugby shirt. And they got into it. So hey, that was my experience, Cal versus Auburn. I'm excited for the rematch this fall. That's all I got to say.
That is two like completely different fan bases that should not ever be allowed to be around each other.
Yeah. And like, Cal and Auburn.
Like, yeah, they just, it's too, I mean, from what I know about Cal fans, like, you know, they have a good fan base, but they're not going to like go to like the depths of the ocean to like defend the team or make comments. Auburn is the jihadist of the SEC. That's what they are.
Yeah. And I will get in when we talk about Auburn, there were some comments made about a coach that needs to stop, but we will get into that later because we are out of time talking about the general questions. It is time to jump into each team to make these easier. We're just going to go right down in alphabetical order or close to it. Hopefully I made it in the right order, but it's fitting that we start with what has been the torchbearer, I would say, of the SEC over the last, almost 15 years now. That is the Alabama Crimson Tide, Kalen DeBoer's first year. And the first note I have, it's what everyone's thinking, is how can you replace the GOAT? How can you replace the GOAT, and can you? I think he can replace it in a way, right? I think he is going to be good. I mean, he's won everywhere he's won. I think I have him down as a 104-12 record in Division I football or his football career. I think he can be good at Alabama. He has Jalen Milroe, who I think is going to continue to develop if he can continue on his track. We know how much of an athlete he is. If he showed glimpses of him throwing the football, that throw in the Iron Bowl last year was absolutely insane. Like, that was the peak of Jalen Milroe, was that play. But I think they're going to be good, but there's going to be probably a game or two that they lose, and Alabama fans are going to think the sky's falling.
No, it's like, and they're going to get made fun of because it's going to be like, oh my God, you know, like you said, you went 10-2 or 9-3, like in the guy's first year after, like, calm down. But these are the same people who are like legitimately like would lose a game and start questioning if Saban wanted to be there anymore. They'd be like, well, he was out fishing last week. Like, I don't know. We're 12-1. I don't know if he wants to be like, that's just how, I mean, they've gone on a 15-year run basically of either winning, being in, or being the favorite to win the national title, which is like really it's absurd if you think about that in like in any sport, but specifically like,
yeah,
I like, there's not ever, I personally don't think, like, maybe Florida State in the 90s when they had like finished, or from like 87-03, whatever it was, where they finished top five.
Yeah.
But it's, I think they should be pretty good, but I think part of it is like how that place is different than Washington and Fresno State and the College of the Mines or whatever.
Yeah, but he's been doubted before, Kalen DeBoer. And like a couple other things, like one other thing I want to touch about is I think one of the key losses is Caleb Downs going to Ohio State, the talented freshman safety. I think Alabama has always had, I mean, teams nowadays always have to replace talent. I think Alabama, you saw with some players like Caleb Downs, like the receiver that went to Texas. I felt like they had to replace more this year. They had to replace more, but look, I think, is Alabama going to be good? Yes, they're going to be fine. They're going to only lose probably one or two games, and they're going to be battling for a chance to go to the SEC championship. It is impossible. This is an impossible year for Kalen DeBoer, because if he makes the playoff, it's expected. If he doesn't, the sky is falling. And that's that. And that is that.
Like, they play Texas. Let me look at this real quick, because I have a schedule pulled up for us right here. I wanted to say they play, maybe it's Georgia, they play like really early, and if like they get killed in that game,
it's gonna be a big, yeah, no, it's,
stay off of Twitter, Caleb.
If they get killed in that game, that is going to be 2012 level LeBron Paul Feinbaum show callers. Yes. That is what it will be. But yeah, no, I'm Alabama, it's going to be the same old, it's going to be same old but different, I think. Let's move on to Pig Suey. Sam Pittman. Sam Pittman has one foot out the door. I've tried to think, what does Sam Pittman need to do to keep his job after this year? Like, what is the bar for him?
I think you have to win like 8 games. Because it's weird.
I don't see that happening.
And it's so like, that schedule can get so brutal. It's like, I'm trying to think how to word this. That schedule can be so brutal that you can be 3-6, right?
Mm-hmm.
And 1-5 or whatever, like 3-6, 0-6 in the SEC.
You feel like you played a lot of good games and feel like, yeah, you played good
and
games.
Not have a single win in the SEC. So that's the issue he's going to run into. And we have to throw out there that he did bring the king of Fayetteville.
That's what I was going to say. He brought in the X factor. And the X factor probably should have an S-E before the X, the sex factor, Bobby Petrino. He's back. The king is back riding on his motorcycle. And he brought his new side chick. Talented quarterback coming from our alma mater, Boise State, Talen Green, who I have been looking at through some SEC forums, the Arkansas forums, and I'm not going to give them too much crap because I saw the same thing about on Boise State forums, and they are comparing Talen Green to Vince Young. Yes, yes, that it is true. His running ability, when I watched him, he has the fastest straight line speed I've ever seen, or I've seen from a quarterback in the last 4 years. He is still so raw. And I guess if there's anyone to get that raw talent out of him, it is Bobby Petrino, who seemed to work well with mobile quarterbacks. I think he worked with Lamar. So that's good for a guy like Talen Green. But like you said, he just seems he's too raw. And I think this, like you said, you could go, there's just too much talent. There's too much talent. And Sam Pittman, man. He's a nice guy. I love the soundbite of the cold beers, but this team seems 2 or 3 years away from me. I think Talen Green in a year or two can make some damage, but not this year.
No, I agree. I still don't think Arkansas is fully recovered from some previous head coaching hires.
And we will not name names, but his name rhymes with Mad Loris. So... we will not name names, but if your name rhymes with Mad Loris, you may be at fault here.
And you have a child that might play in a school in the Big 12.
Yes, we're definitely not naming names. But let's move on to the Alabama's rival, Hugh Freeze and the Auburn Tigers. First of all, before we talk about Auburn, I saw the exchange between Auburn Twitter and Brian Harsin over the weekend. Today's June 4th, so over the weekend. And whoever sent the picture of Joe's son from Family Guy and said, "This you need your Twitter deleted. Elon Musk needs to step in. We cannot have that on that app. That is hate speech. You cannot You cannot call him Joe's son from Family Guy. That is unacceptable. Unacceptable behavior even for the SEC.
Like I said, their fan base is the jihadist of the SEC, and I've been warning, you can ask, like, I have the text, I've been telling Diego, our fans, after the Brian Harsin tweet, we're trying to start a proxy war, and you do not want to get into a proxy war with Auburn fans. They have not. They called a head coach Joe's son. What do you think they will do to you, random Boise State? They dig deep. They will spend hours. They have Yellowwood money.
Yeah, Yellowfella, yeah.
They are not playing around. That being said, I think Auburn might win 10 games this year.
So I had them just under that mark. I think this is definitely a team that can get to that 8-ish win mark. My question for them, I have two questions for them because, you know, Hugh Freeze, there's a lot about his personality that just seems so unappealing to me, but he does know how to build. And if he can keep building like he did last year, I can see them taking the next step into that kind of like tier two, like very good, like from average to very good, maybe not great, but very good. I have two questions. Who's going to be the quarterback? Who's going to be the quarterback? Is it going to be Peyton Thorne coming back? I saw him against Cal. Little iffy. Is it going to be Hank Brown or Walker White? Who knows? I think that's probably Peyton Thorne's job to lose. But like Based I said, he's going to have to take a big jump for me if Auburn wants to get to that 10-win total.
Based on the name, I would say Walker White is like the perfect name for an Auburn quarterback. But Auburn like is weird because they – we'll have like a really good quarterback and then like 6 years of like just god awful quarterback play. Like, yeah. They went Cam Newton and then had like Sean White and I can't remember the guy's name that they brought in that was going to be like Cam Newton. And then they had
Nick Marshall, who was pretty good. And then they had another few years of bad quarterbacks. And they had Stidham, who was pretty good. And now they're in like that another lull of quarterbacks. And maybe this is the year where they get another like, hey, this guy's all right. Go for it.
And they completely wrecked Bo Nix had to move to the West Coast because of what they did to him.
Like you said, if they made Auburn alumni and like Alabama Player of the Year, Bo Nix, have to change coasts, what do you think they will do to you, 200 follower Boise State Twitter user? These people cannot be reasoned with on Twitter. But no, the other question I have is, and I didn't believe this when I looked it up, Auburn's on their fifth defensive coordinator in 5 years this year.
It was not like, and I get our fans want to defend him, it was not good there under Brian Harsin. Like, it was Derek Mason left, and then I can't remember who he brought in after that. But even like the end of the and Gus Malzahn was pretty good there. Like, went to a national championship, almost went to another, like, had some pretty good teams. But it
beat Saban three or four times. Yeah.
Like, a pretty good record, all things considered, against Nick Saban. So, we'll see with them. They are an interesting fan base. They're one of those, much like Georgia, that it's a Pandora's box. So,
we'll see if it gets opened again. Right. We'll see if it gets open. Now, you know, we've had three pretty optimistic reviews in a row. We got the Florida Gators now. You got Sunbelt Billy. I mean, they've had a couple. This is like the make or break. I think Florida is ready for a reset. And I think barring a 9-win season, do you think Billy's done?
I think he... And this, okay, so relating a little bit back to like the realignment and the playoff, in this day and age, there is no more like, oh, like he had, like we went 10-2 or whatever and didn't win the national title, but we were good. It is, especially for like 10 teams in that league, playoff or bust. So like, I'm not saying he has to make the playoff this year, but yeah, eight or nine wins and pretty close in the others, and I think he'll be fine. But
I mean, they've already had an offseason riddled with injuries. They had the Rashada thing take place a couple months ago, where they're getting sued. They got sued by a former player. Like, it seems to be a little bit of the mess. And the one question I have on Florida, when I was reviewing them, is: close your eyes, take a deep breath. Can you see Graham Mertz as an SEC, like an all SEC quarterback? Like, can you envision Graham Mertz? I think it's simple as that. I don't think Graham Mertz is bad, but I think in this league nowadays, you this the quarterback talent is too much. I mean, we're going to talk about Georgia's. I mean, Milroe, Ewers now, Dart. A guy like Graham Mertz, maybe he would have been great, you know, in 2009. But I think he's a good quarterback. But Florida needs more than a good quarterback for them to reach the goals that their fan base wants to accomplish this year.
Exactly. And they're one of the teams that I just brought up their full schedule. And they go, they play Miami, Stanford, A&M, at Mississippi State, UCF, and then this is their
That's
back
tough.
Half of
That's...
their schedule. At Tennessee, Kentucky, Georgia and Jacksonville, at Texas, LSU, Ole Miss, at FSU. Mm-hmm. I don't see them. I mean, if they got 8 wins out of that, he would probably keep his job. But I don't even know if I see 5 wins, to be completely honest.
We'll see. We will see. We will see. All right. Well, let's move on to Florida's rival, the Georgia Bulldogs. I have it big circled on my note sheet, and it's highlighted in yellow. It's Kirby Revenge Tour. I think in some sick way, this is what Kirby Smart wanted. He lives for people to doubt him, and he does it himself. I call him Kim Jong Kirby because he controls the news in that town in Georgia. Only letting bad news about the Bulldogs in, even though everyone has them in the top 5 every single year. But I think this is just what Kirby Smart needed. I think he has probably, in my opinion, what could be the most dynamic quarterback he's had at Georgia, Carson Beck, who I think is going to be front runner for SEC Offensive Player of the Year. Georgia looks good. This is Georgia at its peak. They picked up ETN from their rival Florida for running back. I have Florida. I mean, I'll spoil it now. I have Florida in my SEC championship game. I know it's the cheap, easy pick, but returning quarterback, pissed off Kirby, good transfer portal offseason. Yeah, I think I'll roll with the Bulldogs.
And I'm going to come to your defense because he said Florida in the SEC championship a minute ago. You meant Georgia.
I meant Georgia. Oh my gosh, did I say Florida? I had Trevor Etienne on my mind. Thank you for correcting me. And relax, Georgia fans who have already typed out 15 sentences on the YouTube. I'm sorry. I have you in the SEC championship game. I think this is fine. Yeah, sorry. But yeah, I think Georgia's going to be – I think they're going to bounce back this year.
I do. That's what's so funny is, like, it's not even a bounce back, really. It's a – oh, we lost by a possession to Alabama in the SEC – or, like, first loss in 3 years or whatever it was. So, I mean, yeah, I think Georgia – like, they might not go undefeated, but they're going to be in the playoff. I would, like, almost bet my life that that team is in the playoff, barring, like, everybody gets injured. And even if, like, a couple guys do get injured, I still think they're going, so –
Plus, I have an X factor in Georgia. Beer is going to be sold in the stadium for the first time, which could pose some problems if you're an opposing team. So I think that home field advantage is getting riled up at Stanford or Sanford Stadium. But yeah, I got Georgia. They're a machine. They're the new standard. They're just going to keep rolling. Like you said, maybe a loss or two, but they're going to roll. Speaking of a team that's, I think, going to have more than a loss or two, it's Kentucky. And with the whole Stoops thing, and Stoops was like in Texas A&M and then the boosters threw a fit and now he's back at Kentucky, I find that a little awkward. Now, I know Stoops is kind of like royalty at Kentucky, but personally, I find that a little awkward, and I'm interested to see how that like dynamic plays out during the season this year.
Yeah, I mean, like, they love that guy there because he's like made them relevant. I like not great, but like probably about as good, I think, as Kentucky can be, considering all the other teams in that league. But yeah, that like that kind of stuff changes things. Like, you might not get people trusting you as much when it's you almost left, and like if another, like if Florida comes open or like LSU or whoever it could be, like he might be their first call. So we'll see on them. I like every year with Kentucky, I say,
yep,
start 4-0, finish 7-5.
Yep. And I mean, they got Vandegrift, but from Georgia, and I don't know if he's too much of a unproven product. I mean, he was kind of sitting behind Bennett and then sitting behind Beck. So we'll see if Vandegrift can, because he was a high-rated recruit, Vandegrift, coming out of high school. So we'll see if he can live up to that. The last quarterback that transferred to Kentucky, I don't think lived up to Kentucky fans' expectation, and Leary. So we'll see if Vandegrift can live up to that. Speaking of expectations, I think this is a school that probably has the highest expectations out of all this year. I think higher than Georgia, higher than Alabama. I think LSU fans are like foaming at the mouth for a playoff appearance. And is it fair to say LSU is almost like a dark horse this year because they're kind of being overlooked a little bit with all the hot names coming into the SEC?
Yeah, I think so. Cause like, and they struggled on defense last year, but it
That's
is
what I had.
weird. Like they just had the Heisman Trophy winner on their team, and it's like no one's really, talking about him. And like Brian Kelly, he's good at a few things. Maybe having people die that are working for his program and winning
Alleged,
football games.
no, not allegedly. I think Brian Kelly, with the resources that, I think LSU puts good money in the cherry picks or cherry lifts. So hopefully he will not have that problem again. Fingers crossed that they don't practice in a hurricane down there in Louisiana. But I think you mentioned it. They got to get better on defense. They're bringing in Blake Baker from Mizzou to coach that defense up, and they got Harold Perkins, who's supposed to be one of the top defensive players in the conference this season. The LSU always has defensive talent. I don't know what to say about the LSU defense. It just needs to be better. Last year was so almost like shockingly like watching a car crash, because you just expect LSU to have these great defensive teams, and you're watching them lose games when they score 40 points. It was almost like jarring.
Yeah, it's they had it quite a few times. Like I felt like it was in a weird way almost similar to the Joe Burrow team, but the defense was just like five times worse, because it like that defense under Joe Burrow wasn't, like how you picture a traditional SEC defense that allows like
But they were
12 points
good,
a game or whatever.
but they were
Yeah, they were
fine.
good.
They were,
And
yeah,
this
I don't
last
know.
year it was LSU had to score 50 to win games versus competent offenses. So,
That's what I think. No, I'm excited to see what LSU does. I think they may be disappointed in the fact that they may miss the playoffs, but I think this is an LSU team. I have them above 8, 9, 9, 10 wins. Just, I think they may get squeezed out with just too many teams, in my opinion. But
couldn't agree
speak.
more.
All right, now gonna get a little sad. Mississippi State. I think the good thing about Mississippi State is that their fans know they're in for a rebuild, so it's gonna make it a little easier. It's not gonna be as shocking as I think if it was at another SEC school. But oh man, I don't. I mean, I hate to be like negative, but I on paper. In preseason, and we're recording this June 4th, I have this as it's either them or Vandy as the worst team in the SEC.
Yeah, it's gonna be a rough year for the.
I have in my notes hoping for 5 wins. That would be a positive season. I mean, Leiby, he's a good coach, but he's got his work cut out for him, especially when this is probably the best in a while that your in-state rival has been. And so it is uber sadness right now down there in Starkville.
Yeah, I mean it's. It's gonna be rough, I think, and start. I can like I agree with you. I just don't know where what they're gonna do this year. Like they have like four straight weeks of Florida, Texas, Georgia, and A&M. And then
Yeah,
end at Tennessee, Missouri, Ole Miss, like that.
that stinks. Oh well. I mean, we'll see. You know what? Bookmark this. We're gonna end Mississippi State early. Bookmark this. This is a free pass year for Mississippi State. Just get better, work on the fundamentals, and 2025 is the year for Mississippi State.
Right. Pull up, maybe pull off one upset.
Yeah, exactly. Now we're going to what I think is the most exciting. low-key exciting team and the most interesting team in the SEC, and that is the Mizzou Tigers. I was a hater of Eli Drinkwitz all year last year, but he does something in that program, and after listening to him talk more in interviews, yeah, I think he's a tool. But, man, that tool's working. It's hammering, and it's doing its job and fixing that program. They return their quarterback, Brady Cook, and I know you're going to say I'm crazy. I can see them making a run and contending for a shot at an SEC title.
Oh, absolutely.
Let me read you off this schedule. I mean, they don't play Texas. They don't play Georgia. They don't play Tennessee. They have Oklahoma at home. I mean, they have a game. They have Alabama. That's their big game. They beat Alabama October 26th, which could very well be like the Alabama meltdown game where people call in the Feinbaum show. But they beat Alabama October 26th. We're going to talk about Mizzou as definitely a top 10 team in the country, potentially a top 4 team in the country.
Yeah, I think, and they're going to start out pretty highly ranked. It's not like, you know, they finished 7-5 last year. And people are like, oh, they finished good. Like, they went 11-2, right? Was that their record was?
Yeah, won the Cotton Bowl.
And beat Ohio, granted, Ohio State had people sitting out, but they still, like, beat Ohio State. They were pretty close with Georgia last year. Like, they have some big expectations, and we'll see if Elijah can get it done.
Kirby, that's his full name, isn't it? Kaiser. Even if it's not, I think we should call him that, Elijah. I just call him Diet Kirby because they have the same visor dealer. But we're going to move on to the first newcomer of the SEC, the Oklahoma Sooners, Boomer Sooner. I think Oklahoma's going to do okay. The thing with Oklahoma is this year is going to be tough because every game is going to be a Super Bowl. Every away game they play is going to be a circus, because they're going to be the new kid on the block. It's like when you're the new kid out of school and all the kids, even though they might not like each other, they're all going to look at you and go, you're now the lowest on the totem pole and you got to beat us up to move up. We're not going to give you anything. That's what I think is going to happen with Oklahoma this year. But if we've seen anything with Venables, he's improved every year. Well, it wasn't the Big 12, but I can see him improving a little bit. I think it's going to be tough for them to compete for an SEC championship this year, but I see a solid year from the Sooners ahead in 2024.
I think a big game it's going to decide how their season and Auburn season is going to be when they play each other like week 4 or 5. Let's see here. 1, 2, 3. Yeah, they play each other in week 5. And Oklahoma will be coming off of playing Tennessee, and Auburn will be coming off of playing Arkansas. So you could have one of those scenarios where Auburn probably will beat Arkansas. So if like Auburn's undefeated and Oklahoma has one loss, one of those teams could get out of that first month and be undefeated, and the other could have one or two losses. So I think that's going to be a big, like, you'll know a lot about where one of those two teams is, or where those two teams are heading for next year, at least. Or for this year, I should say, based on that game. And it's in Auburn, so Oklahoma fans.
I have them, yeah. I mean, Oklahoma, they've continued to improve that defense. They were really bad when Venables first got there, coming off of Lincoln Riley teams. But they were the 31st ranked rushing defense last year, which is crazy to think about for Oklahoma. And they have a new quarterback who has the same body type as Kyler Murray, Jackson Arnold. He's short, but he's supposed to be very talented. He looked pretty good against Arizona in the bowl game. So that is the Oklahoma X factor, is what I will say, is Jackson Arnold. Can he perform like his high school recruiting stars rated him as? So, yeah, I think Oklahoma, they should be solid. Moving on to Zuch, your team, the Ole Miss Rebs, the Rebels. This is the most hyped Ole Miss has had in a number of years. I'm just going to let you start this and take it away for a minute or two.
It's most hype they've definitely had since the year after they beat Tim Tebow, Florida, and made him cry. Remember that, Gator fans?
Gator fans are just catching too many cheap shots. I had them teasing them with my mispronunciation and my miswording of SEC championship. You got that cheap shot too. We got us calling Billy Napier Sunbelt Billy in the intro. Florida fans, we are sorry, but you might as well get used to it now because it's just going to get worse, I think.
My fear with them, and I do think they'll make the playoff, but my fear is that they'll like beat Georgia. They play Georgia and then have a bye week, and then like their last game or next to last game of the season is at Florida. And my fear is they beat Georgia, have one loss, and then lose to Florida or lose to Mississippi State and don't make it.
That's the way college football goes. So that's what I have in my notes for Ole Miss is, I think Ole Miss be the third best team. That should be their motto, because Georgia is really good. And then I think it's going to be a mad rush for that second spot. Ole Miss, you be the third best team. Be the team that obviously you don't want to try to be that, but I think Ole Miss can definitely see themselves as like the third best team, squeeze in as like an 11 seed, 12 seed into the playoffs. That is their route.
They'll be in. 10 and 2.
All right. 10 and 2. All right.
Fair enough. I think in the SEC, a 10 and 2 team will make it in.
It'll be the transfer portal success story because no coach has attacked the transfer portal like Lane Kiffin.
Speaking of him, there were rumors swirling that he was the anonymous coach who said that about Brian Harsin. And he retweeted the quote about Brian Harsin.
he also said he was also Brian Leiby. He was little brothering Leiby, unfortunately. He said he first of all it was a picture of him and he tagged the Egg Bowl right on his head. Mean. Also, he said congratulations on the weight loss. Again, mean.
Lane Kiffin is like a puppet master. He's like, oh, you know what? You know, even if Ole Miss did go 9-3 this year, he's not getting fired or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So he knows, like, his situation of, like, he's got it pretty good. Like, you win some games, get a good bowl game every once in a while. They're not getting rid of you. So he just likes to, you know, oh, I'll say this about Hugh Freeze. I'll say this about Nick Saban. I'll tweet out the rat poison about Kirby Smart and ask about traffic laws in Georgia.
No! Oh my goodness. No, he really is. If you mold it, it's been said. If you molded a coach for Gen Z, it might be Lane Kiffin. Let's move on to South Carolina. Beamer Ball playing Beamer Ball, blaming Chain Gang guys, eating hot dogs. South Carolina, this is a team I think they've almost, I don't know if they're going to surprise anyone. What I have in my notes is, this could be a Diet Florida situation. I just think South Carolina, since Florida has been kind of like the forerunner and the lead anchor of like underperforming teams in the SEC, them and A&M, I think people have turned a blind eye to South Carolina because last year they kind of fizzled out. Shane Beamer, his first year there, they were looking real, real good. And last year they kind of a little fizzle, even with Rattler.
It's they couldn't block like their line was atrocious last year. So I mean, he's another one that it, and like that's kind of the problem when you have a hot start at one of those schools and like kind of, and I guess it's a little different now because of the transfer portal and so many people can leave. But when you have like one of those 8-win seasons in your first year, you set yourself up to where that's what people are used to. And I'm not saying you shouldn't try to win in your first year, but like Sam Pittman's in the same situation.
That's it. I was just going to say, I mean, when you, this, especially in this conference, you know, fans are just chomping at the bit, even what people would consider like, oh, middling tiered SEC programs. Right. But like South Carolina fans don't think that. South Carolina's got more and more resources than 80% of schools in the country. So like they're thinking we're going to win an SEC championship. And like I said, I mean, I'm going to ask you the same question to end out the South Carolina talk that I asked about Sam Pittman. How many wins do you think Shane Beamer needs to get to keep his job? 7 wins? Did you, like, I feel like he has a little bit more leeway than Pittman. I think he has a little bit more leeway than Pittman.
Yeah, I would say 6 or 7, and he'll probably be fine. He'll need to do better next year, but I will say he'll be okay with 6 or 7. It won't be great, but he'll make it to next year.
Okay, that's fair. Move on to Tennessee, Rocky Top, Josh Heupel, who I think is a very underrated coach, even though he looks like Bobby from King of the Hill.
Back
Mean.
to I saw one worse, and it was from the jihadist at Auburn. They had him literally holding, like in the scene from Toy Story 2,
Oh,
they had Josh Heupel holding, and he's like, "I can't wait to play with you," or whatever, with the Nico, however you say his last name,
from
Lamo.
Al's Toyborn, they called him Al. From Al, this mean. Again, Auburn fans, the SEC Twitter and college football Twitter as a whole needs to step in like the United Nations and do something about the rogue state of Auburn right now. They have been on one. I know they've been stressed about the freeze situation, but something needs to be done.
Yes, they called him, that's his name, Al from Al's Toy Barn. And I was like, all right, you know what? You, and it was interesting. Granted, it was in response to Hugh Freeze with who had taken a picture with a recruit who was shirtless, and somebody, Tennessee fan, said, not the first time Hugh Freeze has made a high school student get undressed.
Come on.
I
Come
was like,
on.
you know what? It's like, it is that you have a whole SEC, but like that, if you made a square around, like we might just need to sanction off like a Berlin Wall type situation and just enclose Georgia, Auburn, Alabama, and Tennessee, like
I
all
will
of them
say,
enclosed.
yeah, we need to do that for sure. And honestly, Oklahoma, I'm going to be interested to see how that mixes into the Twitter space, because they've been kind of big boy in Big 12 Twitter for a while. But Tennessee, I got two words. Nico Iamaleva. I think that's how
There
you
we
pronounce it. Iamaleva, coming out of Southern California. He, I think, in a year or two can be the best quarterback in the SEC. I've
Yes,
seen
I
his high
agree.
school tape. I've seen his practice tape. I've dug deep on this guy. This guy is good. His release is quick. Now, next year, do I think he's going to be the best quarterback in the SEC? No. But I think he's going to be real, real good. I think Tennessee fans are going to like what they see. I think the record for Tennessee fans may be a little disappointing, because I don't think they're going to the playoff. I don't think they're going to the SEC championship. But I think it's going to counteract when they watch Nico and they're going to go, holy cow, we get him for like another year or two.
Yeah, just hang on, Big Bull Daddy. Hang on.
Hang
I
on. I'm
promise we're
telling you.
gonna disclose.
And honestly, I think anything after Moonball Mixon is going to look good for Volunteer Nation, in my opinion. What do we say about Joe Milton? Throws the prettiest looking incomplete in the nation.
It's a perfect spiral 40 yards in front of the intended receiver.
Oh man, but no. So that's Tennessee. I think you just get hyped up about Nico and psych yourselves up for 2025. That's what I would do if I was a Tennessee fan.
Yeah, I
All
think
right,
they'll
we're
get to
moving to.
eight, maybe 9 wins, but I would say their ceiling is 8 or 9 wins.
Well, I think this team is hoping for a little bit more than 9 wins. That's the second newcomer to the SEC, the Texas Longhorns, Sarkisian. I see a lot of people in the SEC not thinking that Texas is going to transfer well. I think this is the perfect year for Texas to move over. They are good. They return offensive talent. They return Ewers. My main question with Texas is, how do they replace interior defensive line talent? Because they relied on those two guys, Murphy and Sweat, a lot last year to stop the run. They also had an inside linebacker get drafted. They relied on those guys a lot to stop the run. How are they? Because I have no questions about their offense. Sark and Ewers are going to put up points, right? How are they going to do on defense? And that will determine whether they are a top three team in the country or not, in my opinion.
So with them, let me just pull their schedule, as the British say, up real quick because I wanted to see. Okay, thank God I clicked on the wrong thing. I thought I was clicking on Georgia. I clicked on Georgia Southern and still thought I was on Georgia and saw Boise State on there. I was like, what happened? Why are we playing them in week one? This is not good. Texas, 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 because they play Michigan week two, right? So they have Michigan, Oklahoma, Georgia, and A&M. That's probably their hardest games. If they – do you think Sark is on the hot seat if they lose three of those and don't make the playoff?
I mean, hot – I feel like if you're Texas and you're not winning championships, you're always on the hot seat. I see zero chance. I think Sark could blow it and win six games next year and not get fired, barring some scandal. But, yeah, no, I think if you're not – if he doesn't finish in the top 20, I mean, honestly, probably top 15. I think if they barely get screwed out of going to the playoffs, he could convince the boosters and the boosters could convince themselves, bad luck of the draw, just like Florida State last year. But if he ends the year like even like 22nd, 23rd best team in the country, I think Texas fans are going to be going, we just wasted you our senior year. And oh my gosh, how are we, you know, we got Manning now. Like, I don't know. Like, maybe you could psych yourself up for Manning. But I definitely think, like I said, with the expanded playoff, a lot of the schools that have kind of been able to coast, like, oh, we're just, you know, we're good, but we're never top four good. And we're going to see that when we do our Big Ten little preview, Big Ten preview with Penn State, who have kind of coasted off that mindset. With this 12-team playoff, boosters see, I mean, shoot, you even see boosters at Boise State being like, oh, man, we got a shot, because you do now. Literally every school now has a shot. So a school like Texas, the pressure is just going to get even more compounded than it already was to make the playoff.
I agree. I think Texas will be. I'm going to save off on my prediction for them. I'll just say the SEC fans, every time Sarkisian tweets about a recruit, need to stop telling him that they serve beer in their stadiums.
Come on. again. I mean, we had a Mount Rushmore of coaches listing of coaches we'd want to share a beer with, and we both agreed that Sark was off the list. He was not available. Maybe share a nice Coca-Cola with him. That's what we'd share.
A morning cup of Joe, but
yes, exactly. Not an Irish coffee though. No. This regular Pete's coffee. We'll take him. Come to Pete Sark and we'll talk. Like I said, Sark, we're open. I think we've invited you. Sark, if you're ever in the Boise area, please let us know. We'll go to Black Rock. We'll go to Black Rock Coffee. We'll get some cold brew. It'll be awesome. Let's move over to the other Hall Texas. Yes, exactly. The other Texas SEC team, Texas A&M. Is it fair to say that I think they're in for a longer rebuild than A&M fans want to admit?
Yeah,
I think they're going to be able to turn it around in like a year. I think this is like a 2 or 3 year rebuild that Elko has.
Yeah, and that, like, A&M is in a weird thing because they're never like horrible. Like, I don't remember the last time A&M went like 2-10. I guess one of the years under Fisher they had like 4 wins, right? Maybe it was a COVID year. No, the COVID year they were actually really good. Maybe it was the next year of the year, whatever it was. But most of the time they're like 8-9 wins, even when they're in the Big 12, like a bad season to be like 6-6. But they've never, at least in our lifetimes, been like what they think they are, which is like Alabama and Georgia and
exactly
Texas and
Johnny Manziel beating Alabama really just completely changed the mindset of Texas A&M fans, honestly. Like, I want to see how I was looking at Wegman's stats pre-injury, and if you're an A&M fan, that's what you're excited about, is you're getting Connor Wegman back, and you're saying this guy balled out at the beginning of the year, got hurt, and kind of derailed the season. I think you can convince yourself of that. You know, Elko wasn't the sexy hire, but Mike Elko is a damn good coach at Duke, and it is hard to win at Duke. It is hard to win at Duke. So I think A&M fans, I know they want immediate satisfaction, and we'll meet in the middle. I think you need to give Elko 2 years. I think Elko year two can realistically having a chance to, like, not like, oh, he might have you competing for a playoff spot. In 2025, Mike Elko will have Texas A&M positioned to be a top 12 team in the country. My thoughts exactly. This year's going to be long, but you should hold on, because Mike Elko is a damn good coach.
They just, you know, I honestly, it, and it's, I'm happy it's back because I always did like this game and always thought it was more fun, which this might be a hot take, but I always thought A&M versus Texas was more fun than Texas versus Oklahoma. Last game of the season, Thanksgiving weekend. Maybe Texas is sitting there at 10-1 and A&M
can play spoiler a little bit, maybe sneak into a good bowl game themselves.
It's at Kyle Field, the freaks that, what do they call them?
The 12th man.
What are those? Yeah, the 12th, like the guys. Like
the yell leaders. Yeah. Hey, those yell leaders, they are weird. I'll tell you what, they make noise in that stadium, but man, they're weird. Man, they have some weird traditions, man. And we'll have to I haven't gone down the rabbit hole. I stared at that tunnel and it just got too weird for me. I just saw like torches and guys grabbing nuts. And I was like, I'm out. I'm out on the Texas A&M traditions. Sorry, but you guys do you. I think in 2 years, Mike Elko is going to have you in a good position. And now the last SEC team we're going to talk about is lowly Vanderbilt, the punching bag of the SEC. They're getting a new stadium in a couple years. They're redoing that north end. And they need to do a good job. Although, does Vanderbilt sell beer in their stadium? I think Vanderbilt needs to do what the Oakland A's are doing in Sacramento. And that's like market themselves as like a destination for SEC fans to come. It's in the heart of Nashville. Come watch a game. Come drink it up at like Luke Bryan's 9-story bar and just have a good time.
Yeah, and I got to hold on. I got to get the stat up because I was dying laughing at this the other day. But do you remember the year that Vanderbilt beat I don't remember who they played, but the guy was like on
TV. He was like, this is real SEC ball. You come play real SEC ball at Vanderbilt. It's show what the real big boys play. And then they lost like 50-2 to Alabama.
Yeah, 59-0. So since that was in 2017, since that game, they have won.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
18 games.
Since that guy gave the post-game speech of this is real SEC ball.
This is real SEC ball. 18 games, including like they've won like SEC games.
Oh no.
If you're looking for someone to blame, Vandy, you have your guy. Man.
And Vandy, it's been a tough year for Vandy because usually they're good at baseball too, but they've kind of stunk it up. But Vandy, we haven't talked a lot about you. But you guys could have the biggest eat the crow moment. And if Kansas can do it, Vanderbilt can do it. That's what, if I'm a Vanderbilt fan, that's what I convince myself. If Kansas can turn it around to like a 7-8 win team every year, so can Vanderbilt. Maybe it'll happen. That's it. Do we miss any teams before we move on to our individual predictions?
I don't think so. I think we got everybody in there.
All right. Well, if we miss someone, we are going to hear it from their fan base and we apologize, but let's get to our first. We're going to do our SEC championship predictions, who we think is going to make it and who we think is going to win the SEC championship. Zuch, who are your two teams? Who do you have taken with all this year?
So Georgia is going to finish 11-1 and they're going to play LSU. Who's going to be 10-2 going into that game. But LSU is going to lose that game and not make the playoff, is my prediction.
And you think a third team, whether it be an Alabama or Ole Miss, will make you think it's going to be absolute chaos.
So you have 1-4 are conference champions, right? Mm-hmm. 1-4 is conference champion. One of them has to be a group of five school.
Yeah. Well, I thought that was.
I'm willing to say that.
I think it's five teams.
SEC teams are going to be in the playoff, and I'm almost willing to go with four. I think LSU would be the fourth team.
Fair.
It would be, and I'll just say it: Georgia, Texas, Ole Miss. If that game is close and it's LSU's third loss, I think LSU will get in. It's like the 11.
All right. No. So mine. My prediction is actually pretty similar to yours, although I think I'm going to shock the nation right here. I have Georgia in it. I also have Georgia winning. I have them playing. I can't believe this is going to come out of my mouth. The Mizzou Tigers. I think
Mizzou?
Mizzou's going to go in there. I think Mizzou's going to beat Alabama almost TCU-esque sort of run. And maybe they just get blown out, exposed, but I think Mizzou's going to find their way into the playoff. I think that's great for Mizzou. I think Georgia's going to get in. I also think I just with the talent that Ole Miss has, I don't see it's hard for me to imagine Ole Miss and Texas not competing for a playoff spot as well. Where I think the craziness is going to happen is I think LSU and Bama are going to be solid. I just think those two teams are going to get squeezed out, and I just have a gut feeling that and maybe this is just me like feeling the universe out. It just seems so perfect that like the year after Saban, like it goes just the shits, and like it take it t like it, that's my feeling about it.
And like before people get carried away, I'm sure it's the same for you, but a lot of mine was based on who these teams, not, I'm not saying who's deserving, who's not, but I
No,
based
the
who is in
SEC.
the playoff on the schedule. Like Ole
No,
Miss
the schedule. No,
gets.
Mizzou's schedule is so easy for a team that returns their quarterback and was in the Cotton Bowl last year. Like,
Right.
it is so easy. They could very well not have a loss going into that Alabama game. I mean, only time will
Yeah,
tell. You know, I hated on Elijah all year last year, and I'm finally giving him his props, and I'm sticking my neck out right now for him. But if he doesn't pull it together, then oh well, I guess I'm the loser like him. All right, let's go on to our single player awards. So we have Offensive Player of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year, and Newcomer of the Year. This is kind of like a hybrid newcomer. It's not the real newcomer. This can either be a transfer or a freshman. I think the Offensive Player of the Year is going to come from who I think are going to be the SEC champs, Carson Beck. I think Carson Beck plays himself into being the best offensive player in the conference, barely edging Ewers and Milroe. I think Carson Beck will play himself into being a top 15 NFL draft pick. I wanted to hate last year with the sus Snapchat stories. There was a sus Snapchat story for Mr. Beck, but I saw the play and I liked what I saw on the field. Have to get that Snapchat under control.
So my offensive player of the year, and it's because of people they brought into, but I and it's kind of a homer pick. I'm going Jackson Dart is going to get offensive player of the year. No more Quinshon Juggins, which I think helps him. Bring in not Smoke Harris. They still have Trey Harris. They bring back basically every receiver from last year. And they bring in oh my God, I'm blanking on his name right now. Juice Wells from South Carolina.
I think so. I think is I think I yeah,
That's
I think you got that
it's
right.
Juice something. They
If
bring in
not,
him
let
from
us know in the
South Carolina.
comments. Let us know in the comments
Yeah,
if we got that
well,
right or not.
so he's gonna have one of the best offensive coordinators as his coach, all kinds of people to throw it to, and the kind of the guy who took away from some of his offense is gone. Like, I mean, maybe a receiver wins it, but usually if a quarterback is lighting it up, the quarterback always wins it. Even like Joe Burrow had Justin Jefferson. Joe Burrow had oh
Jamar
my God, what's
Chase.
Ja'Marr Chase? So and I went to Joe Burrow because he threw. I'm not saying it's going to be a Joe Burrow season, but I think that I'll pick Jackson Dart because I think Georgia will be a lot of that will be Georgia will be beating teams by more than Ole Miss probably will be. So Carson
That's
Beck
fair.
won't be throwing it 30 or 40 times a
That's
game
fair.
most of the
That's
time.
fair. All right. Well, for my defensive player of the year, I was down to two. It was either Harold Perkins, linebacker from LSU, but I decided to go with, I think this is another favorite pick, is James Pierce Jr., the edge rusher from Tennessee. You
That's who I
know,
have too.
the defensive player of the year was something, you know, it's tough, but I looked at some of the highlights and I was watching this guy, and he's high rated on the draft board. Had 9.5 sacks on a Tennessee team that I think was worse last year than it is going to be this year. I think a double digit sack season, like 11.5, maybe 10.5, couple forced fumbles, fumble recovery, And if just like a splash play, like maybe a touchdown or an interception, I think it's his. As long as Tennessee he has a respectable record, like 7, 8, 9 wins, I think James Pierce Jr. wins this award. And usually edge rusher is a good position for it to win because they are, I mean, they're the highest paid in the NFL for a reason on the defensive side. Like edge rushers impact the game.
Right. And it's hard. Defensive player of the year is so hard to pick because you don't, not that people don't watch defense, but it's so much easier, I feel like, to pick like an offensive player of the year because you can be like, oh, Jackson Dart's been good for a couple years. Carson Beck was good last year. Spencer Rattler, he's gone, but he was good the year before. I'll pick him this year. So we'll see defensively. There's always like the one guy who comes out of nowhere that you're like, oh, this man had 955 sacks his senior year of high school. So
I saw.
No wonder he's a beast, but
he's always like, yeah, three star coming out of Gary, Indiana, started his career at Akron, transferred to like Kentucky last year, and then like just lighting it up or something stupid like that. But so for my newcomer of the year, I don't know if he's going to win the award, but I think it's going to have the biggest impact. And it's a safety who's coming, I think is going to help the Texas defense out a lot. It's Andrew Mukuba. Safety was at Clemson last year. Started looking. I think Texas, you know, we saw them a little bit exposed, I would say, in against Washington in the back end. I think a guy like Andrew Mukuba, he was real good at Clemson, had 28 total tackles, 6 pass breakups as a safety, and he's only getting better. Started looking into more of this guy. He's from the city of Austin, so he's returning to his hometown. Obviously, that plays a part of it. I think that's just a good vibes choice. I have Andrew Mukuba. Maybe won't win the award of newcomer of the year, but I think it's going to be the most impactful newcomer on his team.
So I'm going, and I've been a hater of this guy's. I tried to get people to temper their expectations when he was returning after his freshman year. But with the offense they run, the offensive coordinator they have, and his ability to make guys look really good, I'm going to go Taylen Green as newcomer of the year. Really? Not saying Arkansas is, because I think newcomer of the year is one of the things that you can be for, like if Arkansas went 4-8, right? But Taylen Green has 2,500 passing yards and 1,000 rushing yards, like 20 passing touchdowns and 10 rushing. He'll be up there at least for newcomer of the year. They'll be like, oh, like a coach can come in with him and like keep working on what he's been doing. And mm-hmm. And I think he'll get close to those stats unless he gets hurt, just because that's how Bobby Petrino runs his offense. I mean, he always has guys for the most part. Like towards the end of his arc, like I still never understand how Ryan Mallett became his quarterback. That's like the most rest in peace.
Never forget Ryan Mallett oversleeping on Hard Knocks, all time moment.
He's like a gigantor. I don't know how Bobby Petrino ended up with him, but you know, but like you
RIP,
said, like
RIP when, Mallett, RIP Mallett. Yeah. You gave us some good moments, but RIP.
So that's who I'm going to go with. Newcomer's hard. I get newcomer's hard because there's many now that it's
tough. If Nico Iamaleva, I think, I mean, he doesn't qualify for newcomer of the year, but he might be the best, like, new starter of the year, I think. I just don't think he would qualify as a newcomer. But I think he's going to make a bigger impact than Mukuba just because, like you said, quarterbacks, you put up really good stats. Even if your team doesn't win games, people can look forward to being like, oh, shit, we're going to do real well in the future.
Right.
Well, we're going to move on to the very last thing. It is disappointment of the year. What player, fan base, or team do we think is disappointment and disappoint people? And what is that definition of disappointment? My disappointment of the year, it's not because I think this team's going to be disappointing, if that makes sense. I think the disappointment of the year is going to come from LSU missing the playoff. I think their fan base is going to feel devastated because, like you said, I think it's going to be close. I think they're going to be one of those teams fighting. I think they're barely going to get edged out with a bad loss late in the year. And it's not going to be because they were good. They weren't good. It's not going to be because Brian Kelly didn't do a good job of coaching. I just think the way the cookie is going to crumble, the advent of two new teams in Oklahoma and Texas, the uncharacteristically good or historically good Ole Miss and Mizzou teams this year, I think that all is just going to impact LSU's chances of making the playoff. And I think they're going to barely miss it. And I think that's going to be a disappointment down in Baton Rouge, and it's going to have people questioning Brian Kelly for better or for worse.
I had the same because, and it's like, and it's weird because I'm seeing, like, I think the spread is like 14.5, but I don't necessarily know that, and we'll see, like, he's going to be kind of be on the hot seat too, but I think that LSU could lose to USC in week one.
At the beginning, that would be a sky is falling moment. That,
yeah, and
I'd be hey, our boy Miller Moss, baby. Miller Moss, look out, look out.
And it's one of those, yeah, it's one of those things that LSU season kind of got off the rails at the beginning of last year by getting killed by FSU. And it's not, and like FSU was good. Like, I certainly don't think that the FSU team that played Georgia was the real FSU team. I think it's silly to act like, oh yeah, this is the team, like the same team that went 12-0. Not saying FSC was would have beaten Georgia anyways. That's a different discussion. But they could go out there to Las Vegas and lose to USC, and then you're already 0-1. You're definitely not the favorite for your conference. You have, you know, Ole Miss and these teams on your schedule that you could lose to end up 9-3, like they were last year, 9-3. I don't think LSU was a world beater.
I think they're going to be a 9-3 team. It's going to be another 9-3, and it's going to stink for LSU fans, like, because they're going to feel like their team got better and Brian Kelly improved the program, but the outcome may be the same. But so you think LSU is? I like how you said that. You think their chance at getting in the playoffs is they have to. You said it in your LSU breakdown is. They have to find a way to get to the SEC championship game at all costs. And whatever happens in the SEC championship game, the committee is not going to leave out an LSU team that makes an SEC championship game.
Right. So I think – let me go to their schedule real quick. So I think they have USC – LSU plays UCLA too.
Dude, they're coming for LA. Although
– okay, so they play. I had no clue.
You would look of surprise on your face.
Like, I was like looking at about stuff about them the other day, and it like didn't even come up in the article I was reading. It's like surprising. I had no clue they play UCLA like week four. But so they have USC, UCLA, who's in a weird. We'll get to them in a later preview. Big Ten school, Ole Miss at A&M, Alabama, Oklahoma. So I do think if they could get through that and be 10-2, and like, and it'll be like, it's going to be weird because there's no divisions and stuff this year, so it'll be based on ranking. But say they like, say they're 10-2, Ole Miss is 10-2. I think that almost every team in the league is going to have at least one loss. Maybe like Georgia's the only one that I would be like, is going to be like, I would. If you had to make me pick a team to go undefeated in the SEC this year, I'd pick Georgia. I think the rest, not the rest, but there's going to be 2 through 5 who all could have 2 losses, maybe even 3. So LSU is 10-2, like 10-2 going into that Georgia game and loses. I think that they would have a shot at the playoff because I just do not see ACC, Big 12, maybe a team. The only other teams with 2 or 3 losses I think would knock them out would be from the Big 10. And even then, I do not know that 9-3.
No, LSU is too big of a band. Yeah, LSU. Yeah,
exactly. Has a not history. That it's fair not or gonna... right or they deserve it. That's not what I base stuff off. I base it off of like what I think, all things considered, money. Who ESPN likes because they're on their networks, and the SEC is on ESPN. The Big Ten is not anymore. The Big Ten is NBC and Fox and all of that stuff. Yeah. So We'll see.
We'll see.
I said three SEC teams, maybe four. Going to be interesting.
Only time will tell. No, it's going to be a very interesting season, that's for sure. But that brings the end to our SEC preview. Hopefully we covered everything. I want to thank all of you guys for listening. If you just listen to your team, if you listen to the predictions, if you listen to the whole thing, thank you. We will be coming back in 2 weeks for our Big Ten preview. This is our off-season preview series every 2 weeks. We will be doing every single power conference as well as a group of five preview. We're just going to get all the best group of five teams going into the year and kind of cover that. It should lead us up right into training camp at NCAA 25. Also hoping forbidding some scheduling we have to do, hoping to get a couple interviews sprinkled out throughout the offseason to kind of fill in the time. But Zuch, anything else?
Nothing else from me. Everyone, the preview magazines are starting to come out, so if you like just reading about every team, like a page or two on each team, pick
one
of those.
Get overly optimistic. This is the time of year to get overly optimistic. Start watching the local radio show about how this backup wide receiver is going to explode onto the year next year. This is the time of year to do that. And I see it in Boise. The same thing I see in Boise. I see in Berkeley. I see in Baton Rouge. I see at Boston College. It's just people getting hyped. But yeah, thank you again for listening. We'll be back in 2 weeks with our Big Ten preview. Thanks again. And we will see you then. Appreciate it.